This message, titled Righteousness and Peace from James chapter 3, verse 18, was preached at Winchester Reformed Presbyterian Church in Winchester, Kansas. For more information, visit us at winchesterrp.com.
Well, brothers and sisters, I probably don't need to point out this morning to you that this is the time of the year where the farmers are laboring in their fields, if not already done with the spring planting. And if you look at the fields around us, you have probably noticed that already the spring planting is beginning to show itself as crops begin to poke out from under the soil. Planting season is, in many ways, it's an exciting season. It is a season that is filled with anticipation, and it is a season that is filled with expectation. Farmers planting today and hoping that their efforts today will pay off in the fall when it comes time to harvest. And farmers, in that sense, are a very good model, in one sense, for us of what it is to live our lives in anticipation and expectation of what is to be. Farmers are a very practical illustration of living today on the expectation of what will be tomorrow, as they plant today in the confidence that at the end of the season, they will have a plentiful harvest. And I begin there this morning because you'll notice in many ways that James, here in verse 18 of our text, James is concluding his thought on this thing he's been writing about, this thing called wisdom, and he does so by using this agricultural illustration, an illustration from the world of farming. James says, "A harvest of righteousness is sown in peace by those who make peace." And James, here in the 18th verse, it's important that we understand this, James, in many ways, is concluding, in one sense, his section on wisdom. But as we've seen, and I hope you've come to appreciate in this letter, even as James often concludes one thought, he is simultaneously introducing us to the thought that is to come. And that's exactly what James is doing here. In one sense, he's tying up what he has been writing about wisdom, but in another way, he is transitioning, preparing us for what he is going to say throughout the rest of this letter in chapters 4 and 5. And in many ways, this transition point of verse 18 finds James transitioning, you might say, between principle and practice. In chapter 3, verses 13 through 18, James gives to us a profound principle, a way of thinking about wisdom. And in the verses that follow, beginning in chapter 4, verse 1, and running through at least the 6th verse of chapter 5, what James does is he takes those principles that he's been writing, and now he puts them into practice, giving us practical instruction on how to make those principles evident in our lives. And maybe right here, even by way of introduction, maybe here it is useful to remember that Christianity, brothers and sisters, is a principled faith. Christianity is based on objective principles. And the attitude and the behaviors that we are to have as Christians, as those united by faith to Jesus Christ, are attitudes and behaviors that are informed by biblical principles. But the Christian faith is also mundanely practical. And the principles that James is writing of here have application in the real world. And we've seen both of these from James, haven't we? We have seen, on the one hand, how James's foot is firmly planted on biblical, unchanging principles. And on the other hand, or rather the other foot of James, has been planted in the realities and the daily routines of everyday life. And that is what James is doing as he comes here. He's transitioning us from the great principles he's been writing about to the practical practice of Christians applying those principles to their lives. And this morning, we're going to get not much further than this 18th verse, where James says, "And a harvest of righteousness is sown in peace by those who make peace." And I want to focus on those words in two simple points. First is the big idea. What is James's big idea here in verse 18? And then, as the Spirit enables, I want to preach a little bit on the brilliant illustration itself. The brilliant illustration. So the big idea and the brilliant illustration. So I want to begin this morning with the big idea. Before we come to the details of this illustration, this illustration that James gives to us in the 18th verse, it's helpful, it's useful for us to understand how what James writes here, how this really fits into the bigger picture of this section. There are some commentators who will write on this verse, and they say, really, verse 18 is just kind of dropped into James' letter out of nowhere. And they actually try to reason that there's no real connection between the 18th verse and anything that has gone before and anything that is going to come. One commentator just noting it's an aphorism that appears out of nowhere and essentially goes nowhere. But of course, that's not the way that James writes. That's not the way in which the Spirit has inspired this text. And so it's helpful for us to understand the big idea here. Now, in understanding the big idea, I want to remind you where we are in this letter. James, we have seen in chapter 1, comes at the end of that chapter to really set the outline for the rest of this letter. James saying in chapter 1, verse 26, that there is this pure devotion, this pure service that we are, as the people of Christ, we are to render to God. And James tells us, doesn't he, that the three great themes that he wants to draw out in this letter of our devotion to God, the first is compassion. James says you've got to meet with widows and orphans in their affliction. James reminding us that as Christians, we are to live lives of compassion, meeting people not apart from their needs, but in their needs. The second great theme that James introduces at the end of chapter 1, which we see here in this letter, is controlling the tongue. James telling us that we as the people of God, as the people of Christ, we need to bridle our tongues. And James has given very pointed, very convicting teaching on the control of the tongue in the first part of chapter 3. But the third great theme, as we've been seeing, that James is writing about in this letter, and we find it introduced there in verse 27 of the first chapter, is that as the people of God, we are not only to be a compassionate people, we are to be a controlled people, but thirdly, James's theme is we are to be a people who are uncorrupted and unstained by this world. He tells us this is what true religion, real devotion to God looks like, keeping yourself unstained by this world. And of course, how you do that, how we are to do that, is a massive question. It's a huge question for all of our lives. How do we live in this world without becoming just like the world? How do we pass through this world so filled with sin and corruption in a way where we are being preserved from the spiritual contamination of the world around us? And of course, the way some Christians seek to answer that question, well, they seek to answer that in very superficial ways. Well, if you want to be unstained by the world, do not handle, do not taste, do not touch. Just do that. And they want to make a list of do's and don'ts. And as long as you avoid the things in this column and you do the things in this column, well, you're good. You can pat yourself on the back. You're not like the world around you. Do not handle. Do not taste. Do not touch. which the Apostle Paul elsewhere, you may remember, says these things have the appearance of godliness, but they lack all the power. And brothers and sisters, James' answer to that question, how do we remain unstained by this world, is not a superficial list of do's and don'ts. James is instructing us, as we have seen, that if we will be in this world, but unstained and uncorrupted by this world, how do we do that? James says the answer is wisdom. It is filling your head and it is filling your heart with wisdom. And as James writes about that, beginning in verse 13 of chapter 3, as we've read it this morning, we're reminded that James in these verses really compares and contrasts two different kinds of wisdom. And he says there's really two kinds of wisdom that are at work around us and in this world. And you'll remember, I hope, the way in which James contrasts those. He contrasts them by their source. He says there is, on the one hand, a wisdom that comes down from above, a heavenly wisdom, a wisdom that comes to us from the Father of lights, in whom there is no shadow and variation and change, a heavenly wisdom. And he says, on the other hand, there is the kind of wisdom around us that it's not a wisdom that comes down from above. It's a wisdom, he says, in the 15th verse, that is earthly and unspiritual and demonic. And he contrasts the source of these two kinds of wisdom. James also contrasts not only their source, but their qualities. The wisdom that is earthly and unspiritual and demonic, James tells us, is a wisdom that expresses itself in the qualities there in verse 16, in jealousy and selfish ambition. In jealousy and selfish ambition, he is saying that is the kind of wisdom that is earthly and unspiritual and is a wisdom that is born from Satan himself. Whereas this other wisdom, this wisdom that is from above, is marked by what qualities? Well, he says in verse 17, that wisdom is first. It is pure, and then peaceable, and then gentle and open to reason, and full of mercy and good fruits, and impartial and sincere. And you begin to see the stark contrast between these wisdoms. But James also, to really help us understand this, contrasts these two wisdoms by their results. What is it that if we live according to this wisdom, what can we expect to be the result? And if we live by this wisdom, what can we expect to be the result? And what does James say is the result of living in this wisdom that is earthly and unspiritual and demonic? What is the result, brothers and sisters, of living your lives according to the wisdom of this world? Well, James tells us in verse 16, where jealousy and selfish ambition exist, there will be what? There will be disorder and every vile practice. You don't have to jump through hoops to understand what James is saying. When we live by the wisdom of this world, the result is disorder and every vile practice. And brothers and sisters, what James says here is something that we experientially know if we will pause for a moment and look at the world around us. The world around us is filled with disorder. The world around us is filled with every vile practice. And James is saying the reason it is because people are living in a wisdom that is not from above. And why is it that this kind of earthly wisdom results in those things? Well, again, as we have seen in the past, it's because that wisdom, at the end of the day, that wisdom is self-seeking. It is a self-seeking wisdom. You know, just think about that this morning. Put 7 billion people into this world, all of whom are self-seeking. And what's the result going to be? And forget the 7 billion, put 40, 50, 60 people into a church, all of whom are self-seeking. And what's the result going to be? Forget the 70 in church, put 2 people into a marriage who are self-seeking, who are self-centered, who are selfish. And what are you going to get? James says, here's what you're going to get. Here's what the result is. It is disorder and evil of every kind. And when he says that, he's not exaggerating his point. When he says that, he's not speaking in hyperbole. And in fact, this is what James is going to go on to demonstrate. If we can jump ahead just a little this morning, this is what James is going to demonstrate in the verses that follow. What happens when we in our lives do not live in the wisdom that is from above, but we order our lives by the wisdom of this world? James is going to go on to give us in detail, here's what's going to happen. I mean, look at chapter 4, verse 1, where James immediately, he poses this question. What causes quarrels and what causes fights among you? Is it not that your passions are at war within you? You desire and you do not have, so you murder. You covet and cannot obtain, so you fight and quarrel. You do not have because you do not ask. James is saying, in a practical illustration here, brothers and sisters, James is saying this is the disorder. This is the evil practices that result from living in the wisdom of this world. You're going to fight with one another, and you're going to break out in quarrels among one another. You're going to covet, and you're going to just be at each other's throats. And he goes on to give us more detail of these things as he draws this out. What else is included in where James is going to go? Well, it's not just fighting. It's not just quarreling. It's not just covetousness. It's pride. And it's speaking evil words of our neighbor. And it's having a heavy and a harsh judgmentalism and an arrogance. James is going to tell us later in these words that it creates fraud. Among neighbors, it promotes self-indulgence. It leads to condemnation. It leads to murder itself. And James is saying, this is the result of worldly wisdom. This is the result. And there's something sobering there. There's many different fruits, evil practices of all kinds. Different fruits. But James is saying it's the same root. It's living your life in the wisdom of this world. How sobering that is. I don't say it this morning in a trite way, but we watched in horror this week as a young man stormed an elementary school and ended the life of 21 people. And society and culture asks the question, why? Why? And James's answer is because of the wisdom of this world. And that same wisdom of the world that bore the fruit of heinous murder, James is saying it's the same wisdom that causes quarrels and fights among you. And you wake up and you get in a spat with your spouse. Why? Because you're picking different fruit off of a tree with the same root. It is living according to worldly and earthly wisdom. And we see this play out in society. We see this play out in the church. We see this play out in families. We see this play out in marriages. And James is saying, why do these things happen? Why does fighting and quarreling and judgmentalism and why does fraud and self-indulgence and condemnation and murder, why do these things happen? Because our heads and our hearts are oriented around an earthly wisdom that has no heavenly wisdom about it. And James is saying, brothers and sisters, people of Christ, your heart and your lives can be stained and polluted and corrupted by that wisdom until you come to a place where you no longer look any different than the world around you. And we have to hear that. And we have to understand that. This is the reality of the world in which we live. This worldly wisdom results in and manifests itself in so many ways. The Apostle Paul, in 2 Timothy chapter 3, says something very similar. The Apostle Paul there, in the last letter that he writes, that we have preserved for us by the Spirit, writes to Timothy, and he warns Timothy, this young pastor, in 2 Timothy 3, and he warns him, and he says, in the last days, we operate with the understanding this morning that the last days are all the days from the resurrection of Christ to the return of Christ. And Paul says to Timothy, this young man seeking to be faithful to Christ, Paul warns him and says, Timothy, in these last days, people will be lovers of self, lovers of money, proud and arrogant. They will be disobedient to their parents, ungrateful, unholy, heartless, unappeasable, slanderers, without self-control, boastful, not loving good, treacherous, reckless, swollen with conceit, lovers of pleasure rather than lovers of God, having the appearance of godliness, but lacking the power. And why? Because people live according to earthly wisdom. And the world is going to get, as these last days play out until the glorious return of Jesus, the world's going to get worse and worse. And worldliness is going to grow, and it's going to pressure us more, and it's going to invade our lives and our churches until Christ returns. And James is saying, you can't be polluted by this world. When you let the pollution and the corruption of the world into your lives and into your heart, all these things will result. Well, that's the result of this earthly wisdom. What's the result of heavenly wisdom? What's the result of that wisdom that James is writing here that is from above? That wisdom which is first and foremost, pure. That wisdom that is peaceable and gentle and open to reason and full of mercy and good fruits and impartial and sincere. What is the result of that kind of wisdom? Well, James contrasts in the strongest possible terms, doesn't he? He gives us a very different picture of the results of that kind of wisdom. That kind of wisdom, the result of living our lives by heavenly wisdom, in verse 18, the result is simply this: it is righteousness and peace. It is righteousness and it is peace. While the wisdom of this world, the result is disorder and every vile practice, the result of heavenly wisdom is righteousness and peace. Righteousness and peace. Because heavenly wisdom does not act out of jealousy. Heavenly wisdom does not act out of selfish ambition. Heavenly wisdom doesn't orient itself around me, myself, and I. But heavenly wisdom orients itself around the purity of the God who is triune, Father, Son, and Holy Spirit, who himself is purity and light and righteousness and peace itself. And James is saying, when you seek to order your life in mind and in heart around a wisdom, around that wisdom, the result is righteousness and peace. So that's the big picture here. James is contrasting, in verse 18, he is contrasting the results of heavenly wisdom with the results of earthly wisdom. It's the big idea. But more narrowly this morning, I want to preach something about the brilliant illustration that James uses here. The brilliant illustration. You know, as we've been going through this letter together, I hope you have been as struck as I have with James's command of illustrations. James is a very illustrative writer. He uses illustrations all the time. And by that, I don't mean the cheap illustrations that we as preachers often try to include and incorporate in our messages. Fairly cheap, fairly superficial anecdotes, stories, trying to illustrate a point. James is not like that. James's illustrations, as we have seen in times past, if we're going to appreciate James, we need to take these illustrations and see and understand the subtlety and the nuance of them. Because James is a master of illustrations. James brilliantly uses illustrations. And that's what he does here. And it's interesting to note that as he contrasts these results, the result of earthly wisdom with heavenly wisdom, you know, James is not content. Can I put it this way? James is not content in the 18th verse to tell us about the result of heavenly wisdom in mere propositional terms, right? That's what he does in verse 16. When he speaks about earthly wisdom, he just states it. Matter of fact, where jealousy and selfish ambition exist, there will be disorder and every vile practice. He propositionally states it. That's what's true. But as James comes to think about the results of heavenly wisdom as it plays out in our lives, he's not content simply with stating it as a proposition, but he chooses to say it. He says it quickly, but he chooses to say it in terms of an illustration, and an agricultural illustration at that. And James writes in verse 18, "A harvest of righteousness is sown in peace by those who make peace." Now, I don't want this morning to sow any seeds of doubt in your mind concerning most of our English translations. But there are some translations, I think, that really water down what James actually says here. There are some translations that water it down by really paraphrasing what James says here in this way: those who sow in peace reap a harvest of righteousness. As though peace is the seed that is planted, and after the seed of peace is planted, then the harvest is that of righteousness. But that's actually not quite what James actually says. James does not actually say those who sow in peace will reap a harvest of righteousness. What James actually says, and I want you to notice this morning, our translation captures it. James says a harvest of righteousness is sown in peace by those who make peace. Or other translations say, and then I'm going to connect the dots why this is significant. Other translations say, the fruit of righteousness is sown in peace by those who make peace. And if we pause and think about that for a moment, it's almost awkward. It's actually a little backward if you notice what James says. What does James say is sown? What does James say is actually planted? James does not say the seed of peace is planted, which leads to a harvest of righteousness. But look very carefully. James says a harvest of righteousness is sown in peace by those who make peace. And this is not the way that we naturally think in these agricultural terms, do we? How can I try to enforce this morning? You know, what kind of farmer would he be who in the harvest season goes out to his bean field or his corn field or whatever it is that he has planted and spends the days of harvest collecting the corn, collecting the beans, and the minute he gets done harvesting the field, he turns around and he takes all that he has gathered and he puts it back in the ground? What kind of person would they be who, growing an apple tree, during the harvest goes and they pluck an apple off of that branch and it's so red and it looks delicious and it looks great, and instead of sinking their teeth into it, plucks it off the tree, gets down on their hands and knees, digs a hole, puts the apple in, puts the soil over, and starts watering it? We don't think in those terms. If you're going to plant the apple, you got to plant the seeds. But I want you to notice, and this is so emphatic the way that James does this, James is putting things a little backwards. What is sown? He says what is sown is a harvest of righteousness. We sow the fruit of righteousness in peace by those who make peace. So that if we're going to appreciate this illustration, we need to recognize that nuance. And of course, the question then is, why does James say it this way? Why does James say it this way? And James, in this brilliant illustration, says it this way, first, brothers and sisters, to inform our expectations. To inform our expectations. What do I mean by that? My daughter has planted a garden in our backyard this year. I was asking her, what have you planted? And she said to me, well, I planted sunflowers. And I looked in the backyard and I didn't see any sunflowers. There were no 8-foot stalks with a big sunflower on top. And I suppose in one sense, I could have tried to correct my daughter and say, you didn't plant sunflowers, you planted sunflower seeds. But of course, you don't want to rain on the parade of your daughter. Because your daughter she's planting an expectation, isn't she? It's true she planted seeds, but I planted sunflowers because there's a sense in which she is thinking about that which will be. She is so confident and so expectant that the seeds that I put in the ground, they're going to grow, and they're going to grow into an 8-9-foot sunflower that when Dad asks me what it is that I have planted, I'm going to tell him I planted sunflowers. And we sometimes think in that way, don't we? People talk about planting carrots. Of course, they didn't plant a carrot per se. They planted that which will become a carrot. But it betrays this deep expectation that that which is planted will grow to be what it is supposed to be. And if I can use that, that's why James, brothers and sisters, in this brilliant illustration, that's why James words it this way. He words it this way to give us and to inform our expectations. That as we live in heavenly wisdom, as we seek to have our minds and our hearts guided by this wisdom that is from above, we ought simultaneously to have the expectation that God will be faithful to his promises, and what will result is a harvest of righteousness. So that we can employ that kind of logic, that kind of expecting logic. When I live by wisdom, I can have the expectation that what will one day be is a fruitful harvest of righteousness. To live presently and today with that expectation that this will be. That if I order my steps according to the wisdom that is pure and peaceable and gentle and open to reason and full of mercy and good fruits and impartial and sincere, I can expect a plentiful harvest. You know, when we plant our gardens and when the farmers plant their fields, they have an expectation, but it's a fallible expectation. There are so many things that can ruin a harvest. From the weather patterns, to the bugs, to a bad season. And James is saying, will you understand this, that there is no fallibility here? Here is an infallible expectation. When you live by the wisdom of God, there will be a harvest of righteousness. You can expect it. You can anticipate it. We should have more confidence in this than the farmer has confidence in what is to be this fall. And as James seeks to inform our expectations, brothers and sisters, James then wants that expectation to enter into our daily experience. Notice the way that James words it. A harvest of righteousness is sown in peace by those who make peace. James is commending us to peace. He's saying, as you live in this wisdom and you live by this wisdom, have some peace of mind. Have a calm, sure, tranquil confidence that these things will be. He wants that expectation to enter in to our daily experience. How can I enforce this morning? To grasp what James is saying here. James is saying this. Let me build this by way of scenario. You know, one of the things that's true of my life and your life, I imagine, is that we face disagreements almost every day. Maybe you woke up this morning and you got in a disagreement with your spouse and you have to sit there with them and endure them in this church service, knowing that you're at odds with one another. Maybe it's disagreements in the workplace with those coworkers or the boss who is too demanding. Maybe it's disagreements with your parents or with your children or just with friends. Or maybe there are disagreements present here in this church and in this fellowship this morning. One of the daily realities of our lives is disagreement and conflict. And James is saying, if we will be peacemakers, if we will be those who make peace by living through wisdom, here's what James is saying. In the midst of those disagreements, there's a tug at our heart, isn't there? The tug at our heart is to assert ourselves, to start making demands. To respond to those disagreements with me, myself, and I. And what James is saying, can I put it as practically as I can? What James is saying is this: husbands, it is never lost when you respond to your wife in gentleness. What James is saying is, wives, it is never lost. It is never fruitless. It is not without purpose. When you interact with your husband as one who is open to reason, James is saying, when you come up against the different relationships of life and there's that person in the workplace who is so frustrating and so irritating, James is saying, you never lose when you show them mercy. You never lose when you show them mercy. James is saying, in the midst of the church and the conflicts that can come up in our personal relationships, James is saying, you never lose in striving for peace and gentleness and being kind and exhibiting that Christ-like love to one another. And you never lose, James is saying, because in all of these daily experiences, you need this dominating expectation that as I live and walk and talk and interact in heavenly wisdom, there will be a harvest of righteousness. It may not show up today. It may not show up tomorrow, months, years from now. It's one of the hardest pastoral challenges is to pastor people who are doing things right in their relationships and they see no fruit in it. And they just want to give up. I'm done. I need to be a little more selfishly ambitious. And James is saying, no. Let this expectation influence your daily experiences. You never do wrong in exhibiting the qualities of wisdom as they are found here. Because it may not be tomorrow, it may not be next year. It may be only when the Lord of the harvest returns. But as you direct your life by the wisdom that is from above, that wisdom that James tells us we need only ask for. James is saying there will be a harvest of righteousness. Brothers and sisters, look at the fields around us. They bear the mark of expectation. The farmers of our community and the surrounding communities have sown in the expectation and the anticipation that this fall, they will have a plentiful harvest and infinitely more as people that are seeking to honor Christ in that pure devotion that James writes of. We are to live our lives with the expectation that wisdom applied in every relationship of our life will yield a harvest of righteousness. And as we do that, and we'll see how James goes there, but as we do that, James is saying, as you live in this way, you will navigate life in this world without being corrupted by this world. Let's pray.